Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Very excited about our show today, brought to you by Bandicoders, because a good friend of mine, Michael Long, the CIO for the Georgia Department of Revenue, joins me. And whenever Michael says anything, because of his accent, it sounds intelligent. So no, you're not listening to the BBC, although it's going to sound like it. I'm importing talent to up the quality of this show. So it's a very classy show today. And thank you for joining us. Michael, thanks for being here.
Jay, it's a pleasure as always. Great to see you and great to see the team. Nice to see you've brought the show up a notch.
We have. I mean, honestly, you know, anybody from me is a step up. So the CIO for the Georgia Department of Revenue, how long have you been there?
3 years to the day.
Today is your three-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. We need sound effects, man. No, congratulations and on that. I'm about to hit 3 years in January, so our 10 years are almost lined up. So where were you before?
Before the revenue, I was in travel, U.S. travel. My background is within the travel hospitality sector, and very enjoyable. And the reason I became part of the revenue is I didn't want to move back to Seattle. And I just come from Portland, and I really didn't want to move back west again at this so early. So I was approached by the revenue, asked could I take them to the next level. And it was different, obviously, mm-hmm. coming from the private sector to the government sector. So I didn't know what to expect. Pleasantly surprised, very positive. So that's how it came about. And I've been there 3 years, as I just said.
Now, did you start your career as a technologist?
No.
You were a sportsman, which I don't want to reveal. I don't want to believe the big reveal.
The tears are coming back to my eyes already. So, in terms of my first love didn't pan out. But technology, yes. Mm-hmm. No desire. It was just family who pushed me in that direction. So there was no great desire to be a technologist. I was pushed that way through my father and grandfather, and it moved from there.
So has it become a passion for you, though?
Yes, I still very much enjoy what I do. I'm still enthusiastic. I think I bring that to the table every day, certainly with my team. My demeanor, my approach is very positive. I'm always looking for new opportunities, new ideas. So mm-hmm. I think that comes down, and hopefully the team, and certainly within the public sector, it was a bit of a shock.
Sure.
I do like enthusiasm. I don't like seeing people with long faces, shall we say. You'll never see me looking depressed.
No, I've never seen you depressed.
I've been many times, especially on a Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock when United lose. But I think I'm a very positive person, and I try to bring that to everything I do.
That's fantastic. Now, you walk into the Georgia Department of Revenue 3 years ago. What were the problems that you saw right away? What did they bring you in? Because rarely as CIOs do we walk in the door and they hand you the keys or they hand you your key card and say, you know what, Jay, you know what, Michael, everything's pretty good. Just keep it going.
No, that's a good question, and I think I got the opposite. I was very fortunate. My CEO or commissioner, as they're known within the government sector, very open-minded, private sector himself, so he wanted change. He wanted people to take it to the next level. Try to bring some of the best practices from the private sector to the government sector. So I had an open, mm-hmm. an open-ended checkbook in certain ways, and I could do within reasons mm-hmm. what I wanted to do. Obviously, there's some restrictions. You can't come in and change everything overnight. You can't remove people,
right?
Without some, you know, bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. So, but I did get the feeling that we wanted to take it forward. And so that suited my demeanor.
So when you come in, obviously you had to assess the talent. And, you know, coming from the private sector, it's probably a little easier than it is, especially in the government or the nonprofit sector, to maybe recruit mm-hmm. top talent. How did you approach that?
Well, first of all, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
The talent, I came in nervous. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking, do I need to try and attract some of my colleagues, which would be difficult because mm-hmm. of the pay structure. But I was pleasantly surprised. My management team was quality. The team below them, 85% was good. So I realized I didn't need to make any quick changes. I gave them time. Obviously, they needed to understand my goals, my mission, my vision, and my culture, and buy into that. Some did it very quickly. Some it took quite a bit of time. In terms of the talent, we've done very well.
Have you?
You know, like any CIO, we compete for the same people. We're always looking for top talent. And what I wanted to try and do was to bring some youth. We had a very aging structure within the revenue. So I was trying to attract some young people. And to our pleasure and to our commitments in what we're trying to do, we attracted 6 recent graduates from Georgia Tech.
Fantastic.
And other universities. They had a choice in terms of Home Depot, Georgia Pacific, Equifax, all the good companies, Coca-Cola. And they came to the revenue. So we did some things well. We are not at the bleeding edge, but we're not far behind. We are pretty advanced.
Well, let's unpack that just a little bit, because you and I have probably very similar approaches to talent recruitment, especially given our respective sectors. Millennials are motivated differently, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they it's not just about, because if it was just about pay, you and I are in big trouble.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I think we probably both pay fairly, but compared to the private sector, we're laggards just a little bit. But we have other incentives, don't we?
Yes, we do. We do. And I think, you know, pay, as you said, the people I try to attract, I think you've got to be open-minded. And I put a lot of importance upon it, Jay, in terms of how I attract people. I show people around. Mm-hmm. I don't just put them in the interview room and then interview them and show them the door. I see what they're coming into. I encourage my team to be interactive with them. I stop at roller skating and rollerboarding. I'm very traditional. I like people to sit at their desks. Well, I do have some strange chairs.
Yeah.
But overall, we've attracted them. They collaborated very well because they take this campus mentality to the DOR. So I have collaborative areas where we just talk over coffee. Talk about work or anything related to work or anything to do with personal things. So I've encouraged people to start sharing and talking more. So we have several collaborative areas within the floors, which has proven to be a great success. People like sharing, and it's gained more and more momentum as we've been doing it. So I think we've proven to be very successful in that policy, and we've recruited 6 recently. I'm going to bring in some more.
That's fantastic.
And plus it's getting us where we need to be. That talent, they're exceptionally sharp and they're quick. They grab things very quickly.
And do you find that what they get excited about, of course, is meaningful work? They can come in, they can get their hands on stuff. You know, millennials, they bring a fresh energy. They want to be part of an organization that is actually doing something impactful. They want to get their hands on some technology. And like you, we're not bleeding edge, but we're fast followers.
Correct. And I think what's been good, Jay, is that I've encouraged my management team to stop thinking in silos. So when I bring people on board, it's not that job for the next 20 years. I'm looking to move them around the department so they can gain experience and more knowledge, and they feel they're part of the team. So some people you can do that with very easily, and some you can't.
Right.
But the younger ones want to learn. They want to be engaged. They want to be able to commit and show their value. And we're doing that. So it's proven to be, as I said, great.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've had a fair amount of success doing that. Now, are you doing that on your own? Are you reaching out to the universities on your own and building those relationships? Are you partnering? Yes, and? With vendors, you know, that kind of thing?
A little bit of both. We're taking initiative on our own. Mm-hmm. I try to encourage, because what I did do, Jay, is one of our major vendors has a very similar philosophy. They go around all the university campuses US-wide to attract talent to join them. And I thought, well, if they can do it, certainly we can do it. Mm-hmm. So we took their lead in a way, but we restricted it to Georgia. So that gave me the idea. They're offering nothing that we can't offer, and that was the game. So I got my team engaged. We do have HR who helped. They could open up doors within the university complexes. I do know people within that sector, so they offered help if we needed it. But we didn't do any road shows. We told my vendors, let's go for this market, let's get these people, and it proven to be a great success.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about the nature of IT. One of the questions I get often is, okay, I understand why a large nonprofit would need an IT organization, but a lot of times there's not a big connection with how it marries up to traditional IT. And once you get into it, it's very much traditional IT. I mean, we have all the same kinds of things. Is that true in your shop too? I mean, kind of just give us the lay of the land.
Yeah, yes. IT. I mean, you know, we're not different than anybody else. I mean, I'm talking to Jay and we're both CIOs. We have the same problems. We have the same requirements. We have the same business issues. So, and I don't see anything different in my years as a CIO in other sectors to what I'm doing now. So, you know, the good thing that we have, my IT department is strong, technically strong, but they're also very business savvy. So I'm in a very fortunate position, unlike most CIOs, the technology drives the business. So I have a, you know, I could never say that in my previous lives. I always used to share with the business. Mm-hmm. But now, because of my team and their period of time, shall we say, with the revenue, they know the business exceedingly well. So we lead the business in strategy and business development and ideas, and then we share it with them, and then we work together. So, you know, it's very rare you get that. So the revenue really is a giant technology processing center. Everything's technology driven. Everything else can be replaced. The technology cannot be replaced. It's the core of what you do. It definitely is.
So what are the big projects you're working on now? What's 2015 look like? What are you wrapping up in 2014? What's in flight? What are some pretty cool things you guys are doing?
Nothing. We're doing nothing.
Fantastic. I love that.
But no, we just that.
I mean, you're playing golf, you're eating bonbons, drinking mimosas. I love that, man.
I'm speaking to
you. If you're hiring, let me know.
No, you wouldn't quite meet our requirements.
I know. I don't have the right accent.
You don't have to say your accent. You've got to be British.
I know. God.
But no, I mean, it's strange in terms of answering your question seriously. 2014 was the busiest technology year in the revenue's history. We took on a lot. At times, I thought we took on too much. We still have this problem that most technology people have is saying no. So we did commit, but it's been a great year. We've just done an integrated tax system. We've just upgraded that system from version 8 to version 9, which was a 12-month project. This weekend it went live, and I'm here, so it went well.
You're still employed. Your key card works.
We're migrating to the cloud. We've got two cloud providers. We use IBM and Microsoft. I moved my contact center into the cloud.
Did you?
So that proved to be a great success.
What kind of resistance did you encounter internally? I mean, some organizations are a little more progressive. They get it. Was that something you pushed? Was it something?
Yes, it was, Jay. I mean, when I came on board, the contact center business people were very frustrated with our on-premise situation, and they were very disappointed in the direction the GTA was taking them. So I came on board having knowledge of the contact center, and I said, look, let me just introduce you to two potential cloud-based providers and see what you feel. And they came in, I'll say the word, it was InContact who we used. They came in, presented, and they just blew the business away. Everything was so sweet. Everything was manageable by the business. The business could understand everything. They fell in love with it. And you know, Jay, if the business falls in love with it, your job's a damn sight easier.
Big time.
So I was very, very, very proud of that. And obviously, I convinced the GTA to move away from their Genesis platform to InContact. They allowed me to do that. And the good thing, it opened up the door. So now they realize what I was saying and doing made sense. So they've now opened up that door to all the agencies. And they've opened it up to more than InContact. There's about 5 call contact centers they can pick from. So it proved to be a great success.
Man, huge success. Are there any special regulatory requirements or anything like that and hurdles that you had to come, you know, being a state agency?
No, we have to be careful in terms of data where it's hosted. Yeah. Obviously, FTI data, which is federal taxpayer information, cannot be off-premise. It has to be. So if we're doing anything like audio voice recordings, we have to be careful what we say and what information we take and where it's being stored. So apart from that, no, everything was good. It was tremendous. We can have agents working from home. We have no restrictions in that type of thing. So in terms of technology and business, no issues at all.
So what's on the horizon in 2015?
We're moving, as I said, the cloud. Mm-hmm. We're going to be going 365.
Are you?
So,
have you started yet, or are you just doing?
We're just doing the mail migration. We're going to start in mail, then we're going to open up to all the other the modules within the 365. So we're excited about that.
We love it. We have migrated. We migrated last year, and it was a huge success for ACS.
Well, which is great, because I'll take up your opportunity and I'll come and see you.
You can. And, hey, we're at your disposal, man.
You know,
we're right
I've
down
been
the
to
street.
Your building once before, but
we're neighbors practically. So I do,
and I think that's a great thing. I think CIOs don't spend as much time talking to each other about what they've implemented to see get it first and what the good and what the bad is. So I'll take you up on that.
You can take me up on that anytime. One of the things that makes our community in Atlanta so special, I think, is the fact that compared to many communities, we are much tighter knit. And the fact that you and I are sitting in a room and we've gone through a very successful implementation of 365, not without its own bumps and bruises, but happy to pass on those lessons learned. And if it saves you some wailing and gnashing of teeth, then I'm happy to
totally agree. And I want us to share more than you said. The GCLA is one vehicle we both use, and there's other vehicles as well, but I don't think personally CIOs make better use of their contacts.
So and again, yeah, I think we're the model, aren't we? I mean, not you and I, although we're pretty darn great, but you and
well,
I.
Well, certainly I am.
Certainly you are. I mean, I'm just carrying your jockstrap over here.
And it's used.
Yeah, man, that's some nasty stuff. But so I think Atlanta is a terrific model for other cities to replicate because we are so tight-knit and because we are so collegial. When you first joined, is this your first foray into the private or to the state or the government sector?
Yes, it is within the U.S. Okay. I did about 5 years in the British government.
Okay,
now MI6.
I'm gonna probably if nobody hears from me again, you know who did it. Yeah, and somebody cue the James Bond theme music. Okay, so you come in from a U.S.-based organization, public sector. You join a state organization. What were your big frustrations right out of the gate? You said you were pleasantly surprised, but certainly there were some frustrations.
Yes, maybe. There is. And with anything, I think that some of the bureaucracy is a little bit ridiculous. I think they have best intentions within the contracts. They try to be fair, but they pay more money. So I think that's frustrating. I think in terms of return on investment, I think they need a little bit of education. It's too simple just to sign your name and not really be too concerned of the cost. And that's not me. I make sure there's always a return on investment.
Right.
And I think that is coming from the private sector, where you won't get past the board or the CEO if you don't have a genuine return on investment. And I think within government, it's not that mandatory.
So have you introduced them to some of these concepts? I'm sure you had pockets of people who were familiar with it, but...
Yeah, yes. I think certainly my CEO is aware of it. My CFO is really been supportive, and he's been trying to use me as a model in terms of making sure we evaluate and we get true value. And I also do vendor negotiations. It's something they didn't do.
Oh, really?
They didn't do well. So I think I've brought on a different approach to my vendors, which has been encouraging, and the vendors have enjoyed it, which is a good thing. I think the business now are realizing that, one, I've gained great trust with the business, because if I recommend something or I want to do something, they know I've done due diligence. I'm not just doing it on a whim. I've looked at all the options, I've looked at the costs, et cetera, if I'm recommending it, it will make sense. So I think that's great when you get your business people who buy into that. And I think their mindset is changing. I think they're looking at how they can improve, and I think that's one. And like I said to you before, the good thing is I generally drive a lot of the business strategy, so I can provide those costs, and I know. So I'm in a little bit of an easier situation than most CIOs.
Building that trust takes time. I mean, you come in, they don't know what to make of this guy with a British accent, right? And and it probably took some time to establish that credibility. How did you get up to speed so quickly? Was it immersion? Was it just you got in and just talked to everybody? What was your...
I'm British.
Yeah, I knew that was somehow... I saw the smirk on your face, and I knew that was coming. You can read the phone book and sound smart.
I think it's my DNA, Jay.
Okay.
I'm a very collaborative type of person, so I spend quality time with the business peers, giving them the opportunity to give their top three and worst three experiences within the IT organization.
Great,
so I think when you open up looking for the negative as well as the positive, you get a better response. And I said, I can't fix everything overnight, but give me time. And I think they could see very positive reaction, not only from the IT team in terms of the way they worked with the business. I'm a person who doesn't do anything that I don't do myself. I won't promise anything that I won't do myself. So I think it was a process. As I said, and I think sometimes a lot of it is your demeanor, your style. Mm-hmm. If you're looking enthusiastic, like we talked about first question, I think they gain confidence. And I say it personally, I'm quite easy to talk to.
I think transparency becomes one of our best friends, and I know people who have heard me talk about this. I say it all the time, but the reason I do is because when you're transparent as a leader, and there obviously are exceptions with regulatory or confidential information, but when you're transparent as a leader, you can't help but to develop trust over time. When you're willing to reveal the good, the bad, and the ugly, but more important than that, along with the plan for fixing it and staying in constant contact, and not just unidirectional, but bidirectional communication, saying, hey, this is what I heard you say. How does this sound to you? Did you take that approach?
Yes, I did. I try everything. And I treat people as individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have one style for every divisional director, you know, because they've all got different personalities. So I tend to try to get to know them, see their hot buttons, and making sure I'm presenting the right information to the right people at the right time. And some you have to be very honest with and say, we accept we've made mistakes. And I have no problem in saying I've made mistakes.
Well, we were talking about your golf game earlier, so...
You're on very... I'm going to ignore that question. But no, I encourage my team because there was a little bit of a culture where failure was not acceptable.
Okay.
I changed that, not overnight, but I said, because I'll get to something else that is probably dear to both of us, is innovation. Mm-hmm. And if you don't encourage failure, innovation will never work because they won't try anything. So you've got to make sure that failure is acceptable under managed conditions. Mm-hmm. And I think they opened up to that. So,
and that takes time, doesn't it?
Does.
Because at first people don't, they want to believe you, but it's tough to build that trust. And it was very similar to ACS where you saw people say, that sounds good, but is this a temporary condition? And in a few months you're going to...
Exactly. And I think I hear it now. I hear people say, well... We had this 5 years ago, and I said, I can't fix things 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, I can take responsibility for. But so they won't let things go, and they keep it in their memory that they may have got hurt in some way, personally or through technology, and they still feel that I won't change anything. And it takes time to get their confidence.
Right.
I think I've got it now. Mm-hmm. I won't say 100%, I think 90%. There's still a few people who are still on the fence. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I was...
They might be Irish.
Scottish.
Yeah.
But I know I'm a great believer in I won't spend all my time on the 5%.
No.
I'd rather work with the 95%. So I give people the chance.
Yeah.
But
You're never going to get everybody.
Don't spend all your time.
You can't because when you have a majority of the folks all kind of rowing in the same direction... To waste your time. That doesn't mean you're going to treat them with disdain. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you're going to isolate them. You're still going to do the olive branch and reach out to them, but you're sure as heck not going to waste your time courting one person out of 100.
Totally agree.
Yeah, yeah. So innovation, one of our favorite topics, fail, a culture of tolerance for failure. But you made a comment right after, in under managed conditions. Mm-hmm. Talk about what that means. Yeah. I think I know what you mean, but
I encourage my team to try different things and to be innovative, but without being ridiculous. I.e., you can't say we've tried something and we've brought all the systems down. you can do
that's
it once.
On
you can do
IT,
it once, but no.
On.
So I think when I say managed, I mean be professional.
Right.
Try things, but if we do have a failure, it's not disastrous.
Right.
And we learn from it. So, but I do encourage them. I encourage them to speak. My demeanor is that I'm not always right, and I will take the team collaboration. Mm-hmm. And if they convince me there's a better way of doing things, I have no problem changing my mind because they know more than me. And so I encourage that, and that is working. We are now seeing, and when you say innovation, Jay, and to you, it's probably the same thing. It's not invention.
Right.
I'm not looking to redesign the DOR and change all our systems overnight. It's not a research and development program, but it's innovation of existing processes. How can we change things for the better?
Iterative innovation, and that really makes up the bulk of most innovation that's out there. How can I take an existing system and apply it more efficiently, apply it in new directions, that kind of thing, versus pure invention where here's this thing that did not exist before.
Exactly.
And this is very similar in the nonprofit space. The last thing, I think where we look at invention or we look at things that don't exist, we want those dollars going into cancer research, right? We want but although even in that space, it's a lot of reapplication of existing therapies and existing, medicines, et cetera. But you want that going toward the stuff that's going to save lives, not R&D for, mobile devices.
Correct.
Or something.
Correct.
Like that. Yeah, no, that's a terrific point. So we had a very similar kind of culture where there was a little bit of a siloed fear, mm-hmm, of failure. And I always try to tell my folks, fail cheaply, fail quickly, but fail forward, meaning learn from it.
Yes.
And have you seen that become more infused into your culture now?
Yes, definitely. And I think some have been encouraged by it because they're looking to take us to the next level. Mm-hmm. And so, I've created new groups. We have a architect management office. We have a, mm-hmm, vendor management office. So we've been moving and stretching the bar going forward. And that encourages us to. And I try to be serious and sensible when I say an architecture management office and a strategy, 2 years. Mm-hmm. I can't live with these 10-year.
No.
I'll be dead. But, but you've got to be sensible. We've got to live in the real world.
We do.
And I make use of that. I make use of my vendors. I spend a considerable amount of money. So I use my vendors correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to be wise. But we are making some good inroads. The team are excelling. They've got a new lease of life, I believe. I think the morale has increased tremendously during my time, and they bought in. We've seen, and me, Jay, with the time we spent together, work is fun as well. You've got, mm-hmm, to have fun.
Yeah.
Everything's not life-threatening and disastrous, so have a fun. Put a smile on your face, etc. There's a time, another day, another time. And I've encouraged that, and they always see me. So we do have fun in where we do, but we are very professional. And you can do both.
Oh, I agree with that. You spend most of your waking hours, and if you're not enjoying it, then they get the heck out of it.
Exactly.
I think what we have is one of the greatest jobs around. I love being a CIO. I can tell you do too. And if you're not enjoying it, then find something else. Because short of being in, and I'm going to say this, and I know exactly what I'm saying, short of being independently wealthy, a movie star, a rock star, or a famous athlete, which we'll get to in just a little bit.
The knee.
yeah, as you clutch your knee in pain. But let's go back to strategy. You said about a 2-year vision, and I agree with you. And I think so many people get riled up about having a 5-year, 7-year, 10-year plan. Mm-hmm. And I think that business today is moving too quickly to lock things in. Now, that's not to say that I'm not cognizant of forces that are out there, and you're making some directional decisions after 3, 4, 5 years.
Yep.
But ours is really a rolling 18 months to 2-year type plan.
And very similar, very similar. I think, you know, because as you said, technology changes, you try to put a roadmap together which allows you to change.
Right.
It allows flexibility. And that's what I insist with my vendors. I need flexibility. What I'm doing today in 2017 might be slightly different. And I don't need vendors saying, well, we can't do that.
You locked yourself into a five-year commitment.
Exactly. So I try to keep contracts yearly, tops 3 years, and it's working very well. So I try to be realistic. And but as long as you've got a vision and where you want to be, and things change. As you know, we're talking about doing things that 2 years ago we probably wouldn't have been even thinking about. So I think I encourage people to have a plan, but be prepared to change it.
Because, I mean, not only is technology changing, but the business processes and the environment and the you know, just the whole landscape of government and everything else is changing. Mm-hmm. So to that end, when you have new opportunities that come in, whether it's a business partner bringing you technology idea du jour, because, you know, we always find people that don't meet a vendor they don't like, and or there's a new business idea from your business colleagues. How do you evaluate those as an org? How does the Georgia Department of Revenue evaluate those new opportunities and prioritize?
Well, we do. Obviously, we try to prioritize in terms of the value it brings, right. i.e. in terms of the cost savings, improved service quality, customer-centric, whatever it may be. In terms of the vendors, I try to have a dual vendor strategy. Mm-hmm. I have my strategic vendors, which I spend quality time with. And I'm always looking for boutique vendors who can internally develop with me. The carrot I give them is that if we could do something which was beneficial to the revenue, i.e. we improved our service or we launched a new product, I can open up 49 doors. So they gain, they can see, oh, this could cause it. If I'm the revenue in Georgia and the revenue in Georgia is well respected within the US, we're in the top five. If I say we should talk to this vendor, they will. If that vendor calls them in isolation, they won't get an answer. So that's my carrot to any potential vendor.
That's a pretty big carrot.
It is a big carrot. You know, 49 potential customers, and anything in the government tends to be expensive.
Right.
You know, it's quite a good revenue stream. So, I mean, even the big players have bought into this, and they're looking how we can do some internal development together. So we encourage that, and it's working very well. I can't give you any examples,
of course,
but you know, we're very proud of that, and I think that's something I changed within the vendor,
right?
Because I'm very honest, I won't waste vendors' time. If they if they've got a product or a service that I like, we will work together. If it has no credibility within the revenue, I'll tell them very quickly.
Well, I think they appreciate that
they
too.
They do.
No, I mean, I have talked on the, you know, to many potential partners saying, look, just not a fit for what we're doing. Happy to make an introduction for you somewhere else where open a door for you, shake a hand, introduce you, whatever. But just, I don't want to waste your time and get you all riled up. And
no, because I know how expensive it is. And
it
it's
is.
Time. And so I won't do that. So, and I think, like you say, Jay, I think the vendors have been very proud of that in terms of I've been very honest with them.
And we appreciate the opposite, too. When a vendor comes to us and is very honest about, we may look at a technology and say, on the surface, looks like it's a good fit for the Department of Revenue or the American Cancer Society. And they're looking at it going, God, you know, a little bit of a round peg in a square hole. Nothing better when you're having a conversation with a CIO than to say, you know what, Michael? I just don't think we have the scale or scope. I don't think we can grow at the pace that you want. I don't think this is going to be a good fit, but so we're going to walk away. I got to be honest with you, that means a whole heck of a lot to me as a CIO.
Definitely. And, you know, I think saying that, Jay, I think I totally agree. And it's the same for me. But when you get a vendor who is honest like that,
right,
there's something in your brain that clicks into another gear and you start to look for opportunities for them.
That's right.
Even internally or externally. Because I'm always conscious of good vendors, and it's good and bad. And, you know, so I think that is what I try to do. And as I said, my vendor strategy is working very well.
It sounds like it.
I even, you know, I mean, Oracle and IBM, I've even got Oracle and IBM to start thinking about joint ventures. So
you can't come in here talking that kind of stuff. You know, I'm running an honest show here, so I don't want to. I mean, you bringing that nonsense in here.
Where's that jockstrap?
Where's that? I threw that away. It was pretty nasty. So let's talk about your former career. So earlier I said that being a CIO is a great job unless you're independently wealthy, a rock star, a movie star, or a sports star. And for those of you who don't know, Michael had a pretty colored and successful sport. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, I wasn't a star. I was bloody good. Well, not that good, obviously. But no, I play for the best team in the world.
Manchester United.
And, darn right. You know, obviously, that was my... Funny enough, I had two opportunities, and I won't bore people, but I had a choice between football, as it is soccer to you, and cricket, which is a strange game for Americans. I was probably a better cricketer.
Really?
But there's no money in the game. Hmm. You know, it's... So Americans, you know, we play for 5 days and it's a tie. wonderful for drinking and eating, but so it's a
terrible
it's
a for TV.
Nobody concept. But so I chose football, and obviously I was a striker. I could score goals, and I was probably at a time at Manchester United when there were some excellent players, and I got an injury. And today, not serious, but then probably not worth the taking the risk and the chance. So. It was devastating, so I didn't want to play for anybody else or try for anybody else. I was fortunate to be educated and family supportive. So, but obviously, it took some time.
Right.
And I think I get more annoyed when I see the money. these sports stars are... My God. But I do bring... And anybody who played sport, whether professionally or not, but I do bring those principles to my position.
I think they're terrific life lessons. I have three sons, and all three are active in sports. And although I have no delusions of grandeur for them, although all three are pretty darn good at what they do, and whether they choose to pursue it in college and beyond, who knows? If you know, we'll see how that goes. But the concepts of a team and something greater than yourself, I think, serve all of us very, very well.
Exactly.
And that giving it up for your teammates. And all working toward one goal, whether it's the goal line, the goal, the basket, the home run, the number of runs, whatever it is, are powerful lessons. So you're still a rabid Man U fan. Obviously, there have been some changes in the organization. So your thoughts?
Yes, I positive. I think the move was correct. David Moyes was not the right person for Manchester United. No disrespect to David. He was very successful at Everton. But I think the new coach is what we needed. I think he's probably more in the Fergie line. But that was a terrible act to follow. whoever was there was set up to fail.
That
will never be repeated.
No, it will not.
I mean, unless you're called JC, you're not going to take that job.
No, ever.
I think we've got the right person right now. I think this year is going to be trial and learning. I think we'll finish fourth, which will be respectable for United. They won't win the championship, but I think they could get fourth. We're still one or two players short of a quality team, and I think he knows that. So I'm hoping we're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Last year was devastating for...
Of course.
And we've been spoiled.
Yeah. When you have that kind of success, you...
I mean, now I know what Manchester City supporter went through, but I...
I knew that was
coming.
Right in.
Oh, it could have been Liverpool, but...
All right. So, I worked for AIG for 8 years, and I was proud that when we were there, we were, of course, the sponsor, at least the primary sponsor of Man U. So I got to know the organization very well. And for the record, I'll go on record as saying that's my team as well.
Excellent.
So clearly I just went up at least a slight notch in the book, maybe a little bit.
I've got a different opinion of it.
Oh, thanks. You and I are a member of, first of all, let me back up. I shortchanged your background. You were the 2013 Georgia CIO of the Year winner.
Yes, very proud. I have my OBE. Is it Orby?
Yeah, Orby. Yeah,
Orby,
that is correct.
In a prominent position in my office.
Holding your door open. No, it's not.
In a prominent position.
Oh.
it looks very good, and it's a great talking point. It's a great achievement, personally, as well as the organization. So I'm very proud of it. Very proud of the GCLA.
Well, it speaks to many of the accomplishments you talked about building a successful team, about changing the culture, about being more open, having a sense of fun, but also executing. Because at the end of the day, you and I are paid to execute. Mm-hmm. We can build all the good times all we want. We can have fun. We can be nice. But if you're not delivering, you're just a nice guy who lost a job.
Yes, yes. You've got to be good. You know, and like any CIO, if you don't say you're good, you're in the wrong job.
Yeah, no, I totally.
We make mistakes, but I do believe we're going in the right direction. I think I'm very proud of what I do, very proud of what I've achieved. And I'm open and I'm still ambitious to achieve more.
Well, I mean, we're hungry, right? I think the best leaders in the world constantly want to improve. You know, where you are today is never good enough. You're always looking to kind of get better just about everything you do, I think. You know, speaking of CIO of the Year, we just wrapped up the 2014 Georgia CIO of the Year Awards, and it is the, you know, kind of the premier event for our beloved organization, the Georgia CIO Leadership Association. How did you think the 2014 awards went?
I didn't know what to do with my hands.
You were expecting to come away with a winner.
I was looking for another trophy.
I know.
But I thought it was a great event. I mean, my only thing is I think we could make it longer. I think it's a bit rushed. Mm-hmm. When you gather those people in the audience and we're all dressed appropriately, I think it's rushed.
You want to spend more time with these quality
people.
Well, if
you've got me there at 6:30 in the morning, I want to spend some time.
You want
time
to
there.
Spend some time. We should have mimosas and we need to be...
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. So I would personally, one of the conversations I'll have with the GCLA team is I think, you know, 6:30 till 10 is a little bit short. I think we could certainly go on till midday.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Lisa, you taking notes over there? Lisa's writing you. I don't think I can. She can actually say that online.
I can't read out my glasses.
Who went golfing afterwards?
Me. And I had to get changed in the car. I think it's a great event. I mean, the only thing I would have thought would be nice, I think it, for consideration, I think it would be nice if the past year's winners handed over the trophy. Like the Oscars. You always get the best actor of the year before hands over the trophy. So
I think it's a terrific idea. I think it could be yes and, because instead of having the award sponsor, have the award sponsor with the prior year's winner, mm-hmm. which I think is a terrific idea. You two, I mean, we got Kelly and Lisa, you know, we got some brains behind the operation here. I'm taking copious notes.
But it has to start in 2013 because I want to be back on the stage.
Yeah, we need to go back to 2011 when I won, so... It was a much less meaningful award back then.
It was a great event, and credit to the GCLA. It was a fabulous event.
Well, wrapping up, the GCLA, I mean, we've grown leaps and bounds. What does the organization mean to you? You know, I remember when you joined, and I've seen you become more and more active. Have you enjoyed your membership?
No.
Fantastic. Well, good. I mean, so...
No, joking apart. But no, I think it's been great. It's been two years.
Yeah.
It's been 2 years. I do have ideas. I know we're going to be having a breakfast meeting next week to discuss a few ideas. So I think we can go further.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a great opportunity for us to take it to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm prepared to brainstorm and share those.
That's great.
You know, so we've got a great community, as you said, because I've got some great CIOs. And I think it's what value we want to bring. And I just don't want another group meeting where we all discuss the same things. I think there's something more we can do. So that's what I want to share and see if they resonate with other CIOs.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, we're looking forward to those ideas. I know this is, it's been a blessing for me. This is my last month as chair of the GCLA, and I'm very, very sad because Lisa and Kelly will forget about me, and I will never get another email again.
No.
But this year we had right around 1,000 folks. Is that right, Lisa? We had around 1,000 folks, Kelly? I see nodding heads. We had George Conradus, the chairman and former CIO of Akamai, who I thought did a nice job.
Fabulous.
I thought he was terrific. And our 2015 calendar will be posted online soon. Is that soon? I mean, how soon? Like this, this week? That's very soon, Kelly Eckstein Harris. Very, very exciting. 2015 calendar, visit georgiacio.org. All right, we're going to bring it home. Michael, thank you for being here today, my friend.
It was my pleasure. Great company, great host.
Thank you, buddy. It's always a treat to talk to you. Thank you to Band of Coders who make this all possible. Thank you to my colleagues at Business Radio X who are the best in the business. And a special thanks to Kelly and Lisa who are here in the studio providing moral support from the GCLA. And everybody have a great afternoon. We'll catch you next month.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.